episode 123 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded March 9th, 2017. Back in time. Gotta go back in time.
I do not know what you're referring to here.
Well, you know I'm the biggest Rob Schneider fan on the podcast.
Randy, I do know this.
Yeah. So I was referring, back in time makes me think of the old Saturday Night Live sketch where he's in the elevator with Huey Lewis and he's being the annoying fan and he keeps singing Gotta Go Back in Time at Huey Lewis.
How does he do it?
Gotta go back in time.
Yeah, that sounds like it's super annoying.
It's really annoying.
It's already stuck in my head, yep. And you've only said it twice.
I've ruined it for you. I've ruined that Huey Lewis song for you forever.
You've ruined the whole episode for all of our listeners. Rob Schneider skit.
Then my job here is done. Real Rob out.
No, that is not our sign-off ever. Hey, Les, save us from this. Save us from this somehow. I don't know.
Say something about time travel.
I just want to skip to the end of the episode, and then I'll tell you guys whether this all sucked this bad or if it was just this portion.
That's proper time travel.
You know what, actually? There's probably a Randy in black clothes and a hat in the rafters watching this all go down, but he can't interfere because he would merge with me and destroy the timeline.
I think if that Randy heard you make a Rob Schneider joke, he would jump from the rafters, slap hands with you, and obliterate the universe. Like, fuck it, we're done.
You think in the future Randy is a nihilist?
Oh, yeah. It'd be like the end of Southland Tales.
Oh, jeez.
Nobody got to the end of Southland Tales.
That's the problem.
It could be anything. Nobody knows what I'm talking. I could say anything happened at the end of Southland
Tales.
I'm just going to use this for everything now.
It's just like the end of Southland Tales.
No one saw that. I bet Richard Kelly didn't get to the end of that. I bet there was a last day on set where he was like, fuck it, cut it together, I'm done.
Well, hey, we're the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And we are talking about a whole bunch of shows that actually all relate to going back in time, period pieces, whatever. They all thematically tie into that. So that is our thread, I guess, for this episode. This week, we're talking about Feud over on FX, Timeless, which is just wrapping up on Fox.
It's short, like 14 episode season. Yeah.
Yeah.
NBC, actually.
Oh, NBC. Yeah.
Each network has its own time travel show.
Making History, which is Fox's.
Yep.
Time After Time, which is ABC. The Americans over on FX. And once again, we're going to be talking about Legion. And they go back in time into his memory and shit.
Well,
I watched Time After Time on Hulu and didn't realize what channel it really came on. But ABC makes an enormous amount of sense, having watched that show. That is absolutely an ABC show.
Yeah, that's how ABC would make it.
Yes. I mean, saccharine garbage.
They all do. Timeless feels like an NBC version. I mean, then people say that in this day of peak TV and streaming that networks don't have brands. They still have brands. You can still feel when a show belongs on a network.
CBS procedural is still a thing.
Yeah, CBS doesn't have a time travel show, does it? They need to get one, I guess.
CSI Time...
CSI Time Cop?
Don't they do that?
Man, yes, they should.
I would watch CSI Time Cop.
Can you imagine them going back in time and they're like, oh, we can solve that murder easily. It's dusting for fuming brains. And they're like, what fucking wizards are these people?
We just watched they just watched the murder and go back and explain it all to them.
Yeah. It was really easy. All the episodes are about 15 seconds.
They just go back. It's actually, they solve 100 murders in one episode.
Yeah, they just go back to headquarters. They tell the away team what the crime was. They jump back a day, stop it.
Yeah, done. There's an overpopulation problem in that world.
We're talking about 3 FX shows, by the way, all of which are really good.
Yeah.
So
that channel, I think, is going places.
You think?
Yeah. I think they're gonna
have potential. Yeah, they're
gonna do something.
They might one day create some kind of award-winning show.
We'll see. Cross your fingers. All right. Before we get into all that, a quick reminder to our listening audience that if you guys like what you're hearing, you want to support us, there's a couple ways you can do that. You can go over to the iTunes store, find the TV Dudes, give us a 5-star rating, write a review. We'll read that here on the show. You guys don't have to write the review if you're a little uncomfortable about us reading something on the mic, but you can literally write anything in that review. As long as you give us 5 stars, we'll read it here.
Literally,
if you give
anything.
Us 1 star, we'll probably just berate you a whole bunch.
Yeah, we're
don't
not gonna
do
read
that.
The review.
Yeah, and we probably won't read the review. But patreon.com/TV Dudes, that's another way you guys can help us out there. You can make a per episode pledge. like, give us a dollar or two per episode, whatever you think is fair. And in exchange, you guys get bonus exclusive content. We do a little 30-minute podcast, kind of riffing on whatever. I think this week we're going to discuss our favorite time travel movies.
Because we got to go back in time.
Oh, God. It's so bad every time. Anyway, those are the two ways you can help support us, patreon.com/TVDudes.
Grant, wait, it's me, Randy, for the future.
Okay, let's do it.
You forgot a very important third way, and if you don't get the third way, the apes will take over the Earth.
What is this third way?
You know there are blimps?
Yes.
Well, if you and your friends can get aboard a blimp,
mm-hmm.
you can set that blinking light, instead of saying, like, you know, Bud Light above the Super Bowl,
yeah.
you can say, watch the TV Dudes.
Ah,
or listen to the TV Dudes. I'm sorry, I've said too much. I've got to go.
Oh, weird. Future Randy just said that.
Hey, guys, what
high five regular Randy.
What did I miss?
Something just about disappointment. He missed disappointment. So, yeah, those are the three ways you guys can help support us. And we also want to give a plug to our fellow podcasters on our network, which is the Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record.
Jeez. So this month we are dedicating to, you know, mentioning our favorite little podcast across the pond, the Marvel TV Binge. They are Mike Moody, Martin Thomas, and Nate Bliss. They're talking about Marvel TV shows, and there are plenty of them nowadays.
Yes, there are.
But week to week right now, they are knee deep, shoulder deep, mind deep in Legion. And they're going through and discussing that ad nauseum. So yep. if you guys feel like we're not covering it enough, go ahead and check them out. They're at marveltvbinge.com, and you can also find them at permanentrecord.com.
Yeah, and if you're not tired of my voice, then you'll hear like 2 or 3 minutes of me talking about some comic-related thing every episode.
That's right. You do a little plug for them every
time. That's right.
That's kind of cool. Go check that out. All right, so we're going to move on to some listener questions. If you guys like us on Facebook once a week, Randy will put up a little post for questions, and we got a good gaggle of them this week. First up, though, we got to go to our returning story of the week. So, Les, I'm not sure if you're aware of what's going on, but there is an ongoing drama that Nick Thighs is embroiling us in. He has basically been going back and forth with his friend and his friend's mom, letting them use his password for his HBO Go account so that they can watch Game of Thrones. But right when they got to the end, he changed the password on them so they get to finish.
I saw part of this. Yes. Yeah. This is political backlash.
Yeah.
Well, but also it's been going on. There's been developments, and Nick has been coming to us for suggestions for.
Okay. Yeah. I think I saw the very first salvo in this yep. feud.
Well, it's been building. So if you guys want to go back a couple episodes and check out our listener questions, we've been kind of going through this.
I actually was on Nick's podcast. I think this week, or it's going to go. It hasn't gone up yet, but the UGO podcast. Guest that he does talking about diversity in comics.
Right on. Very cool. Very cool. Check that out as well. All right. Here we go. Game of Thrones revenge update. The tides have turned. My friend and his mom have banded together against me. It is inspiring, really, since this started with a conflict between them. I am happy I was able to bring them back together and gladly accepted defeat. I have finally given them the HBO password. I even made a little fun game out of it. Like all the Game of Thrones secrets, I have passed them the password via a little bird made from paper. I gave one to my friend containing part of the password and one to his mother with the other part. I told them to complete the password, they will need to find the third bird I have hidden in their house to show them that I have finally overcome that they have finally overcome their differences and they can work as a team. Although now that I think about it, I may have forgotten to place the third bird in the house. I sure hope they won't get suspicious of each other and eventually turn on one another. Now that my revenge plot has come to an end, I have a craving to see some of the most satisfying TV revenge plots. What would you suggest? Thanks for all the evil inspiration during this epic tale. I am sad to see it end. But then I remember what is dead may never die. That's a pretty awesome story, and thank you so much for going through all of it for us. So, to his question, what are your most satisfying TV revenge plots that you guys have seen?
I got to go with the Always Sunny guys.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in general, because, I mean, but specifically the most recent PTSD episode.
Oh, yeah, man.
Where Dee decides to enact revenge on a stripper who plays a soldier. And yeah, it's, I don't want to give it away, but it's a brutal revenge plot. And they their revenge sometimes comes with collateral damage, like when they were at the restaurant. And always, I'll try to get revenge on each other. But that's also funny. So, yeah, I go Always Sunny.
South Park for me. South Park's Scott Tenenbaum Must Die episode. I love the buildup of Cartman being the one bullied. Because at this point, they'd already established Cartman is a fucking maniac.
Yes.
And when you see him get bullied, at first you're just like, yeah, this is sweet. But then you're just kind of scared about it. Because you're like, oh, no. This can't end well for the other person. If it goes to a certain extent, it's just going to be bad. And it was. Yeah. And it was so horrifyingly terrible that it's so satisfying and so quotable now. Yes, your tears. Let me lick your tears. I love it. I love that episode.
I guess two ends of the spectrum on revenge plots for me. Sons of Anarchy, for all the cheeseball stuff that it did, it also did a couple of very clever revenge plots really well. Agent Stahl, where they finally let Opie get some revenge against her.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a beautiful wrap-up to a season. And then they tried to do it again with Tig, and it wasn't quite as satisfying, but still pretty good. On the other side of the spectrum, Don't Tell the Bee in Apartment 23.
Oh, yeah.
They're constantly having the bee main character, Kristen Ritter, they're constantly having her do horrible stuff to other people, like take on five other roommates and then sell off all their furniture while they're out of town, and like always kind of shit like that. But once a year, she picks someone at either a Valentine's or a Halloween party in one episode where she overhears some D-bag talking, and she marks this person and then spends the year ingratiating herself into their lives to destroy them. And it's a background boredom thing, and she just picks one every year.
Awesome. At Cypher Music, which is PSYFER Music over on Twitter, asks, "What's up, dudes? No time to fuss around because I think Obama is tapping my phone. But I can't stop talking about my two favorite Russian spies. The Americans have one of the best, if not the best, married couple dynamic in recent TV memory. My question is this. Can you think of a better one?"
Yeah. Coach and Mrs. Coach from Friday Night Lights.
Easy.
The definitive married couple.
Yes, yes. And, of course, the Huxtables.
No.
No.
Nope.
No. You guys can't go with the Huxtables?
Nope.
They're delightful.
I don't really remember them.
Oh, man. Best married couples.
Morticia and Gomez Adams.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah. That's pretty lovely. All right. Next question comes to us from Zach McLernan, who says, "Jumping into comics a bit, would East of West be a comic that would work as a show, given the current political climate?" I'm not really familiar with this, he also says, and the show's literally about a divided America at the end of the world.
So East of West is a Jonathan Hickman comic. It's got really nice art. It's a basically a death comes to Earth. It's sort of post-apocalyptic and ruined. And he is looking for his wife, who's been stolen by, like, I think the corporate or the government overlords. And so he's seeking revenge on them. And I think they basically call down the other three horsemen to take him on. And so, yeah, it is sort of the biblical end of the world, but it's sort of done in a post-apocalyptic Western fashion. It's a really good comic. I think it would make a great TV show, but I think the budget requirements would mean it would have to be like HBO.
Okay.
But I could see it.
Ross Brown says, "Recently, I watched Avatar The Last Airbender for the first time, and now I'm completely in love with it. Have you ever discovered a show that you like years after it first aired?"
I mean, I came to Lost a couple of seasons in on DVD, but that wasn't too long after.
Okay.
Yeah. Best show ever.
But there's a lot of shows since I dropped cable a long time ago. I cut the cord probably a decade back, and so there's been like a year-long patience wait for almost every show, like People versus OJ Simpson. That was good.
Yeah, it's great.
Turns out, I don't know if anybody else watched that. Was that a thing? But
6 Feet Under, I jumped onto that one after the whole entire thing had concluded.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I was able to just like binge through it, and that was both a wonderful and traumatic decision for me. Man, that show is just, it's so much just pain and misery, and my wife was like, "Why are you so depressed all the time. I'm like, I can't stop watching this show.
I did a similar thing binge watching Oz. I came to Oz. Oh, wow. No, you can't do that. You can't binge watch Oz.
No,
it's just dirty.
Don't binge watch.
Just end up shanking people.
Yeah. I came late to Broadchurch, I think. Not super late, but a couple of years after.
Which Broadchurch?
The British one.
Good.
Never seen the American one, actually. Don't really have an interest to.
You don't need to.
Nope.
And but the list I have of stuff, like the big one I haven't gotten to yet is Gilmore Girls. I'll get to it eventually when I have time.
Yeah, there's a podcast out for that.
I know. Gilmored.
Gilmored, part of the Permanent Record Podcast Network.
Permanent Record.
Permanent Record.
Michael Gassini asks, with rumors of another TV writer's strike looming on the horizon, my question is this. If you could push a button that would halt all new TV from appearing for a six-month period, thus giving you time to catch up on all the shows you've missed out on, would you press it?
Absolutely not.
Fuck no.
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 Now, I mean, there's shows that I'm constantly anticipating.
Yeah.
Like, so excited. Like, Game of Thrones. We're going to talk about that in the news segment.
Yeah, no pause on Game of Thrones, please.
I need that next season. Yes. I'm not going to have that delay of 6 months.
No.
Yeah. And I still feel like there would be some kind of loophole that would allow reality television through.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's no writers.
like somehow that's like I would find out that that doesn't technically count as television or something. Yeah. Like I'd hit the button and Bachelor would keep right on air and like, motherfucker.
Yeah. And you're like, shit, I gotta watch Bachelor.
It's the only thing on now.
I need a big console that's got like 100 buttons where I can just like press the real Rob button and stop that from happening. And
because even with peak TV, even with a million hours of TV that I can't possibly watch all of, 2/3 of that is still stuff that either is terrible or that I didn't want to watch, even if it's good.
Yeah. I would always rather have a couple new shows like Legion or Feud showing up in my feed as opposed to, you know, I would love to rewatch Justified and Hannibal and all that kind of stuff, but I'd also love to watch new stuff instead.
You would spend your time rewatching?
I would not spend time catching up. That's the thing. If I hit that button, that'd be 6 months of rewatching Deadwood and crawling through Person of Interest again. And
Yeah. Okay, I get that. Jeremy Price says, first off, non-TV question, what is the comic book shop that you work at, Randy?
Work at and own Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. If you're coming for South by Southwest, you're going to be on the other side of town, but we're worth the drive. You can come and see me.
Shoot on up north. It's about a 20-minute drive.
Yeah, about a 20-minute drive up north.
And you'll get to see Randy's cute little face.
Indeed.
Next question. Everyone always asks about your favorite shows. What is your least favorite time travel TV shows? Love the show. Keep the good work up. Even the snide butthurt comments about the election and our current government give me a nice chuckle.
Oh, good. You're going to be chuckling a lot.
All right. Least favorite time travel shows. Less.
Oh.
I feel like you might have one from that we're going to discuss today.
I mean, even my least favorite time travel show, I mean, that's like, which of these cakes is the worst? what's the worst pie? I would say Time After Time is the worst time travel show on TV right now. And there's a lot of time travel shows on TV.
But not ever. Like, what? No, did you watch, like, Time Tunnel and any of those?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't. I mean, there's got to be a worse one, but, like, Disney
Flash Forward was pretty disappointing.
Oh, God, Flash that Forward was bad. Is that a time travel show? Because didn't they just blip C a minute into the future or something?
If we're counting that as time travel, that's probably the
worst.
That
was a terrible show.
They all jumped ahead in time, and they're like, wait, what the fuck happened?
That was a terrible show.
Oh, yeah, that was a bad show.
Yeah.
So, like, I remember the only scene I really remember now from that is they're in some baby doll factory. And I'm like, what the fuck was that scene about? I don't even remember, but like Dominic Monaghan is in there.
Yeah.
Yep. That was. I don't know. It was right after he has to be taken off Lost. Flash could stand to stop using time travel so damn much right now.
Agreed.
Yeah. But yeah.
Jonathan Haptemichael says, "Hi dudes, I recently received the American season 1 on Blu-ray and watched the pilot for the season premiere for the pilot watching episode on Permanent Record."
Permanent Record.
He even wrote, waits for Permanent Record. It was nice to see where things started with the Jennings. How often do you go back and watch previous seasons of ongoing shows in this era of peak TV?
Never.
But if you had 6 months.
Yeah. I can look to my right. We're in my office right now, and I've got seasons 1 and 2 of Fargo, the last 3 seasons of Game of Thrones, all of Hannibal, all of Justified.
Why?
Waiting
Why
to rewatch. Why do you buy them? Because I want to rewatch them.
But you're never going to... Like,
I know.
I don't even understand the idea of buying physical copies of things
anymore. I know, that's because you're a millennial.
It makes no sense.
I mean, old man.
We're in a room. I get it for comics, I guess, but...
Yeah, but if the power goes out, these don't vanish.
That's also true.
What? But if the power goes out, he's not watching TV.
No, but he could read books.
I guess, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So you get books. I'm an old man, and I like the comfort of owning my media.
Oh, right. Fine, old man.
I'm still not comfortable with the whole digital thing, and I'm getting more comfortable with it because I also don't have as much space. But it hurts me a little. When I buy, like, Legion on digital and I'm getting on my season pass, it hurts me a little because I'm like, I'm not going to have the discs at the end. I'm not going to have all the special features.
Yeah.
Not that I have time to watch any of the special features.
The special features are garbage.
It's a dumb thing. I fully admit it. It's just I'd been doing it for so long. I was buying VHS tapes, sir.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow. What is that?
Do you have a laser disc?
I don't even know that acronym.
I do not have a laser disc. I missed that. Part.
Wait, what? Do you know what the acronym is for VHS?
Video something something.
Wow, that's very good. Les, no idea. Do you know it?
No idea.
Yeah, I have no clue. You know what? The Good Place is one I've been thinking about how I really want to just go back and rewatch
it. Me too.
That. Yeah. And I really would love to rewatch Westworld based on like how I now understand the bigger plot and how they were kind of weaving that. And Legion is another one where I keep thinking, once that one's done, I'd love to go back and rewatch it. I'm not going to rewatch any of these,
but I would
love to think about those ones just now, in particular.
Like Westworld, I went back and rewatched the pilot immediately after watching the final episode, just because it really was fun to catch a few things. Huh. That show was just really tightly written. And so occasionally, if a show really feels like it's going to be rewarding, I will make time, but never the full thing. I feel like Legion is insanely rewatchable. Like I need to go back and comb over those previous episodes.
Yeah.
And I'm still not going to do that anytime soon.
Well, let's set up our last question here. This is Alejandro Reyes Zapata, who says, if you could go back in time and spoil a TV show to get back at someone, what show episode would it be? Oh, man. This, in a way, makes me hurt. But has anyone spoiled something for you back in the day?
Back in the day? Someone spoiled Hodor for me.
Now you just spoiled that for other people. Maybe.
No, I didn't.
We didn't hear the end of that, and it seems like we're still not hearing.
No, because I was pissed, because it was done by the official show page, and by, like, every friend I had, and I watched it within, like, an hour. That was a ridiculous spoilage.
Get offline, Randy!
No,
you knew the episode was coming out! Get offline!
It's not my job to get offline or an hour, come on.
It's your job to curate yourself. If you know you're gonna watch it within an hour.
Okay, Greg, you say there's no such thing as spoilers?
Not the day of. Everyone talks about shit online. Ugh. How can you?
I usually do a pretty good job of managing to avoid TV spoilers. Like I do pretty good with Facebook and avoiding spoilers. Now, in sixth grade, we had to read Johnny Tremaine, a signed reading book in an English class.
I remember that.
There's a character in the book named Rab, who's the best friend of Johnny. Spoiler alert, Rab dies. Literally in the last like 5 pages of the fucking book. And so a couple days before we were due to be finished with the book, so a couple days before we had all finished reading it, a friend of mine walks into class and goes, "Oh man, I finished Johnny Tremaine last night. Can you believe Rab died?" I'm like, dude, there's not a whole lot in this book that's worth getting through. And that's like, you literally took away like the one payoff that may have like been an interesting plot point to this. Like, yeah, it's the one time I still distinctly remember like putting down everything I had in my hand and looking at someone and going, "Are you kidding me?"
So if you guys could go back in time and spoil one person on some show, what would it be?
I still don't want to do it.
Hey, Grant.
Anyone.
It's not Penny's Boat.
I wouldn't even know what that would mean. Like that was like all wrapped up right into the end context. I'm like, see, oh shit.
That's the brutal kind of spoiler where someone says something to you and you don't know what it means. And then 2 years later,
it's in the back of your mind.
You're watching and you're like, oh shit, this was ruined for me.
Yeah. That means that like 3 episodes before the payoff in a show, you'll catch the beginning of an arc of like, oh shit, this must be what that means.
I know exactly where this all goes, and it's ruined. Not just that's the genius of that kind of spoiler. Not just has ruined that episode, but it ruins the entire arc for like 4 or 5 episodes of build up.
I would go back in time and I would tell David Chase how he ends his own series. I'd just spoil it for him.
Hey guys.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones has a premiere date and a teaser trailer.
I saw it.
And an unfortunate hashtag.
What's the hashtag?
What's the hashtag?
GOTS7, which has the unfortunate looks a lot like Goatsy.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I don't remember which friend of mine, but someone put so little good. Hands on the O of HBO that's right beneath it.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It's amazing. I don't know if I don't know if they know it's there and they thought it was funny or if someone didn't see it, but I can't unsee it.
That's yeah.
But hashtag Goatsy. Game of Thrones will premiere on July 16th, 2017, during the summer, not the winter.
Nice. I'm so looking forward to this.
Yeah, I am super excited.
What else we got?
Okay. Iron Fist is coming on.
Yeah.
I've heard no, I haven't.
It starts a week from tomorrow as we record this, and it has a 0% score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Damn.
Actually, I'm sorry. That's exaggerating. It went up to 9%.
Oh,
how do these things score before? I mean, I realize that the first six episodes were released to critics, but like in general, how does Rotten Tomatoes, how is that not haterism voting? Like, I'm pretty sure next week's thing's going to suck.
Well, but this was all critics.
Oh, is this actually critics?
These were all critics. There were 11 reviews.
Because it really wouldn't have surprised me if like Rotten Tomatoes had just predetermined something was a 0%. Like,
no, there were 11 reviews. I think there were like 9 in and it was 0%. And then 11 reviews came in and it was like 9, but like there was one good review.
Now, wouldn't it benefit them to just not release it and fix some shit then?
I don't know that they knew it was bad.
Oh.
I mean, here's the thing. We don't know that it's bad. We may do in a couple weeks when we talk about it, we may be like, I don't know what people are talking about. This is great. I don't think so.
Bet that's probably not what happens.
But if only we could travel forward in time, we'd be able
now,
to know.
I do feel it's not going to be as bad as, like, as a group of people who are professionally obligated to make the most interesting opinion.
Yeah.
I think this is the worst piece of shit I've ever seen. It's a more interesting piece to write than this is a slightly problematic show that didn't grab me. Yeah. And I feel like Netflix has about, on their Marvel shows, come around to that point in time where everybody's already written their praise Netflix story and is going to write their not praise Netflix story.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the thing that the first review I read was Alan Zuppenwald, who I both know and have a great deal of respect for. We don't always agree, but he is first and foremost a comic reader and a geek. He mm-hmm. knows Iron Fist. And so his opinion carries some weight with me. He also knows TV. And what he said about the show is sort of everything I feared in the trailers. And everyone is using some variation of it's talky, it's boring, and the fight scenes suck.
Yeah. Now, talky and boring for other people may not be talky and boring for me.
Yeah.
I there are talky shows that are boring for other people that I really enjoy. The thing that scares me that I'd seen in all those reviews is that the fight scenes are somewhere between boring or hypercut so you can't tell what's going on, which is my pet peeve in modern action films.
If they're described as boring at all, that's bad.
Bad.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it makes sense because the Netflix shows, for as much as they've all been good, have been diminishing returns, at least for me. I think I like Jessica Jones a little bit more than Daredevil, but in general, like Luke Cage was a bit disappointing. Daredevil season 2 was a come down, and they've all been kind of talky. It's just that Daredevil's about a lawyer, and so that kind of works. Jessica Jones is about a private investigator and about sort of trauma and relationships, and that works. Luke Cage is about, you know, racial strife and you know, the politics of a Harlem neighborhood, and that works as talky. Iron Fist is a kung fu movie. It can't be too talky.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a kung fu show that they're going to spend the whole time in a boardroom and then show me a couple of boring fights. That's all the reviews that I saw, which is a terrifying
also
thing.
I'm aware that this is a silly complaint, but put him in the fucking costume.
Yes.
This is a character who, first of all, his costume's not hard.
No, they could have him in a damn tracksuit. Yeah. Even that would be comic correct.
Yeah, it's not hard. And the costume comes from his training in Kunlun.
Yeah.
He comes back with it. Yeah, he should not be in street clothes.
Why are they so embarrassed? Why do they do this?
I don't know.
Of course, as I saw in a comment thread earlier, somebody obviously brought up the problems with making Iron Fist, that there was not going to be a good casting way that did not get them
It was a lose-lose situation,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, there was, I mean, and they ran into a, Marvel ran into a similar thing with Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
There was going to be a lose-lose on some casting in that.
But Doctor Strange, you know, Doctor Strange worked out, and you know why? Because she was great in the role. Cate Blanchett answered all the critics. So all they had to do
Tilda
for
Swinton.
What's that?
Tilda Swinton.
Whatever, they're all the same. All white women, women look the same, right? Is that not cool?
Cate Blanchett only looks like Tilda Swinton from certain angles.
if Iron Fist was great, no one be talking about how Finn was a bad casting. Yeah. I mean, but you've got to be great. And I think Marvel made a dumb move on this because I think that casting an Asian American, I saw someone note that basically having an Asian American be Iron Fist brings up elements of like second generation, third generation immigrants versus, you know, first generation immigrants. You can spin the story into a whole different way.
Would have been just as fun to have him go, everybody needs to stop assuming that I knew any of this.
Yeah. And all the people in Kunlun who are like, this is your destiny is like, no, I never wanted this. Yeah. I'm a banker for fuck's sake or something like that. There's any number of things they could have done. And also it was an easy PR win for them. Because basically, they'd already been given the okay to make their Asian character a martial artist. Like, everybody brought that up as an argument, and mostly was shot down. And people were like, no, look, we don't care. That's fine. Cast an Asian American actor.
Yeah.
So this was an easy buy-in. The only people who would have been upset about Iron Fist being an Asian American character are the purists who wanted a guy who looked like their Iron Fist, which, by the way, doesn't not make them all racist. I have a dear friend who loves Iron Fist, who wanted to look like Iron Fist, and that's fair.
Yeah, yeah.
But
that guy's super racist.
That's true.
I know what you're talking about.
It's a dumb move on Marvel's part. It was an easy, easy win, and they didn't take it.
Yeah, and Into the Badlands is another kind of comic book-based show that just dropped onto Netflix,
yeah.
And I watched the first episode of it recently, and it's Donnie Wu. No, I can't think of the lead actor as an Asian American martial artist. The martial arts scenes in it are fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
And they're
amazing.
And I'm watching it going, I just read about how boring Iron Fist is going to be next week. And I'm watching this and thinking, okay, why isn't that dude Iron Fist?
You know what? Looking at the director of the first two episodes of this and then looking at the producer, this guy is John Dahl. And what else has he directed aside from the first two episodes of Iron Fist?
Oh, the kinetic excitement of Rounders.
Rounders, Ray Donovan, Kingdom, Billions, Jessica Jones, Hannibal, Justified. None of this speaks to action movie.
Ray Donovan's got some tense violence, but it's not action scenes. It's him punching one person in the stomach or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, ugh.
Well, and also the showrunner is Scott Buck. Who was the showrunner on Dexter and who co-wrote the episode of Lumberjack Dexter.
So, what?
Yeah, so maybe not the best guy for it.
Man, please don't suck.
I don't get it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the thing is, it's advanced disappointing. Like, I was already kind of getting a bad vibe off the trailers, and then all these reviews come out, and I'm like, I almost want to thank them, though, because I feel like what's going to happen is I'm going to watch it, and it can't possibly be as bad as everybody's making it out to be.
No, yeah. And if any of this stuff really has valid, I mean, if it's valid and the backlash from the fans that get to watch it next week comes back the same, then maybe the next Netflix show finally won't have pacing problems around episode 7.
Yeah, it'd be nice. All right, Star Trek Discovery, which apparently they're still doing, even though they've moved it up like 3 times. They keep casting people, and they've announced the captain of the Discovery, who is not the lead character, will be played by Jason Isaacs.
That's the best thing I've heard since
what's his name leaving? Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good. And he's going to be, it's his first officer is going to be the basically the lead of the show.
So he'll die. She'll take over.
That's what I've seen people speculate on that. I don't think they're going to go that way. I would guess more that it's going to be about him being a by the book Starfleet captain who stays on the ship and all that kind of thing. And his first officer is the one who goes and has in all the action and is sort of the one who puts things into motion and that kind of thing. And he's kind of the captain. He's like the captain in a cop show, not necessarily the lead, but an important sort of authorial figure.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is still going to air on like a theoretical channel that doesn't exist, right?
CBS All Access. Hey.
No, I'm sorry. It is home to the worldwide smash hit sequel to The Good Wife.
The Good Fight.
The Good Fight.
I was about to make that joke.
I loved The Good Wife. I saw all of it. And so I actually want to watch that, but I'm I don't want to pay for CBS All Access.
Yeah, but you will when you can watch Star Trek and The Good Fight.
God damn, I probably will.
You're that. You're the rare. I actually didn't think you existed. You're like a unicorn of marketing.
I really am. I'm the only person watching both those shows. And they're not going to advertise to me. They're probably just going to run liquor ads in Spanish.
The order that we're going to go in is going to be starting off things with Making History, then we're going to jump over to Timeless, Time After Time, and then we're going to hit the three FX shows, Feud, The Americans, and then Legion, wrapping things up. So first off, Making History. This is a comedy over on Fox with Adam Pally going back in time through a duffel bag to mess up the American Revolution, and then he brings his historian buddy along back in time with him to try and fix things. Randy, you didn't really care for this.
I thought it was a weak pilot. I love Adam Pally. Mm-hmm. And actually, I like everybody in this. I don't know who his history buddy is. I don't know where I've seen him before. The guy who plays Chris is Yasser Lester. I don't actually know him from anything. And his girlfriend is Leighton Meester. And I don't know her, although she looks like one of these actresses I've seen before. I like everybody in this. But I wasn't crazy about the pilot.
I liked it. I like Adam Pally. He has an aloof insincerity to him that makes him funny, but makes him not work in a lead role for me.
Yeah.
I love him as the best friend, or as like all his stuff with Penny on Happy Endings was great. But there's an aloof, I know this is a joke and it really doesn't apply to me. Like I don't believe the line I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like I like his delivery, but I don't buy him as a real guy that's having real issues. It made the scene where he talks about discovering time travel in his dad's stuff.
Yeah.
It makes it not quite work for me.
That's a part I think I had a problem with as well. This idea that if he had invented the time travel, that would give him some degree of authority that kind of cements that he's the sort of leader in a way that you still want to follow.
Yeah.
But he's the goofball jackass in all regards, in all walks of life, apparently.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even invent the time travel, and he just fucks things up.
No, someone should absolutely take the duffel bag away from him.
Yeah. But I was still pretty amused with a lot of the jokes. I like how rapidly they jump into the plot.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a weird, bizarre, complex concept initially.
Mm-hmm.
And they just jump right in. They're like, hey, he's back in time. He comes back. He grabs this guy. And it's like, hey, we got to go back and fix stuff. I messed that up.
Yeah. I love that the American Revolution not happening is almost the opening scene of like, wait, why are there British people here?
Yeah. It wastes no time there. I thought a lot of the jokes were hitting pretty quickly. And, you know, this is a pilot, but I got a good sense of a few of the cast of characters, and I was liking it well enough that I would like to check out another episode.
I'll definitely watch another episode. I wasn't expecting anything more than a sitcom, and it definitely worked for me as a funny sitcom. The only parts that didn't work for me was when it tried for something a little deeper.
Yeah.
And both, I don't think the show didn't need it, and Pally doesn't quite deliver it for me, but he does deliver jokes, and that's what I wanted out of that show. So,
but my favorite thing about the first episode was Brett Gelman playing in a pissed off Paul Revere.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Okay, let's jump over and talk about NBC's Timeless, which just finished its first season.
Mm-hmm.
And I always mess up who this is a collaboration between. It's Sean Ryan and
Eric Kripke.
Eric Kripke, not Tim Kring.
Not Tim Kring, not the Kripke Keeper.
Nope. Yeah. of Supernatural and Revolution.
Yeah. Yeah. Although he likes to mostly just mention Supernatural.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
So this was a short 16-episode season. And
was it 16 episodes?
It was 16 episodes.
Wow.
And as it went on, I got more and more into this. The more they did with the name of the group? The Rittenhouse.
Rittenhouse.
The conspiracy group. That was the strongest stuff.
Nope, that show got stronger and stronger. Because out of the gate, it had a great Alias level setup where I really liked the conspiracy behind the scenes. But then after an initial first two episodes of actually having some consequences, they kind of stopped all consequences and went on to look what cute history period we can go to.
Yeah.
And I get the appeal of doing a time travel show is doing that, but I liked this season progressively better in the last probably three or four episodes of it.
Yeah.
Right at the end, it ramped up sharply for me.
The big reveal about Lucy's dad was a good reveal.
Yep.
Also, I feel like even Matt Lanter, who's playing Wyatt Logan, the boring white dude,
he got better.
He got better as he went along. Like they definitely deepened him and his sort of desire to the episode where
he and Rufus go back to the '80s
to try and stop his wife being killed. That was a great episode.
Yeah, and I like that was the moment when the show started working for me again. Yeah. My issue with the show is that I wanted more consequences, like the sister vanishing from the first episode.
Yeah,
I've said this before. I really wanted there to be a debriefing every single episode where they had jacked up history and they had to go through like, okay, what do you think happened?
Yeah.
And so that by episode four or five, their historian's entire education is void.
Yeah.
And she has to then justify why the hell she's still on the missions to go find her sister.
Yep.
I would have loved that show. And so when they went away from those consequences, I was disappointed. So I really loved it when they started having more stuff catch up to them. Rufus has refused Rittenhouse enough times now that they are actively training up another pilot.
Yeah.
And
it's his girlfriend. That was a great.
I love that their explanation for squeezing a fourth person in of like, I don't know what'll happen. What do you think will happen if we add 180 pounds of organic matter to the wormhole?
Yeah. And the big reveal about the other pilot that came about. I also think that there were two big things that happened. I don't know if this was them learning their cast. This is always happens with TV shows, or if they just, were writing to them as they went along. But Goran Vishnik, Garcia Flynn, they deepened him and made him a much more interesting. He's not just a scary villain.
Yeah, he really doesn't want to be doing this. Yeah. He just has nothing left.
They gave him the Magneto treatment, where I'm like, sometimes I was like, you know what? I kind of think I'm with this guy. And then the same thing, they realized what they have with Rufus, Malcolm Barrett, that he could do more than just comedy.
I love that guy.
Because his stories where he started to sort of stand up to his boss and get into a deeper relationship with his girlfriend and stand up to Rittenhouse and basically start to become more of a guy who was not just a pilot. He was there for the mission team.
Yeah.
I think that was maybe my favorite part of the last few episodes.
They did a great job of giving me a believable way that Lucy would come around to work with Flynn because they Magneto treatmented Flynn and they gave me some sympathy for him. But I love the moment where she got the diary.
Yeah.
Blank.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of fun with their time travel stuff.
Oh, and by the way, that big reveal at the end with her mom.
Yeah.
I loved that. Great. I loved that.
If I have a button that can pause time for 6 months, I can catch up on the show. But without that, I don't know.
I definitely think though that we gave a sort of warm but sort of mediocre review early on. We're like, as it's okay. This definitely became one of my favorite shows of the season.
This is a show that that I actually watch with my spouse. This is one of those like let's sit down and watch a fun romp through an adventure. Like there's nothing too deep about it. There's enough fun ongoing plot. It kind of scratches an itch for a show that it isn't on TV as much for me anymore.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump over to Time After Time over on ABC, which I can't even get past the name. It's such a it's a Cyndi Lauper song, right?
Every time I hear it, it puts that song in my head. So yes.
And who wants to mix that song with Jack the Ripper? I don't.
But by the way, the movie came out in 1979, well before Cyndi Lauper made that song.
And they pulled the title from they pulled the entire opening of the show from the movie. And literally, as soon as they stop just rerunning the movie, the show starts to falter.
Yeah. Well, because the movie was pretty good. I haven't seen it in a long time.
The movie's fun. But the movie has a madcap
it's got that 70s energy to it. Yeah.
From the opening title, I mean, there's the dun-dun-dun-dun, like big Warner Brothers logo at the start, and you know you're in for a Rocketeer swashbuckling kind of time travel adventure between H.G. Wells. And I mean, this is five-fifths of science kind of shit.
The thing is, it's a great premise for a movie.
Which is H.G. Wells makes a time travel machine.
Yep.
Jack the Ripper is his buddy, and he finds out that that guy's a murderer.
Yep.
But Jack the Ripper jumps ahead in time, so H.G. Wells has to jump in his time machine and chase after him into the future.
Yep. They use the exact setup from the movie.
And then when H.G. Wells gets there, he falls in love with a woman who Jack the Ripper's going to kill, and he knows that he's going to kill her, so he has to stop it.
Yeah, basically, Jack the Ripper falls in love with the 80s.
Yeah.
and HG falls in love with a woman.
Yeah. Well, I thought one of the best things they did in here was sort of updating for the modern day. Instead of traveling to 1979, they traveled to 2017. And so they did sort of show HG Wells giving him the sort of motivation that he thinks technology is going to fix the future.
Yeah.
And then seeing that, in fact, it had made everything worse. Jack the Ripper's absolute glee. It'd be like, everybody has guns here, and they encourage it. That was a fun bit.
That was great. Yeah, there's a scene where Jack the Ripper's sitting in a bar with HG, and he puts a knife to his gut. Yeah. And he's like, there's people everywhere. Goes, and none of them will
care. None of them will care. Yeah.
Like, I am perfect here.
Yeah, the Jack the Ripper feels like 2017 is a place he'd fit in was very telling.
Yeah. And I did like HG catching up on news history and crying, because he genuinely thought,
yeah,
I'm going to set it for five generations because we'll be at Utopia by then.
Yeah.
And then we're nearing about the 10-minute mark into the show where it just went to hell.
Yeah, yeah. This was all good stuff. And then it goes to a place where everything's contrived.
Yeah.
None of the character motivations make any sense.
I even liked the time machine design, which was different from the movie. But I liked the kind of diving tank
design.
Yeah, it looked pretty rad.
And I love the effect of them just building up to this, like, you think it's about to be a spectacular explosion or something, and then they just skip ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're there and the glass is frosted.
Yeah. I like the rhyme on the liked all of that and almost nothing else about this show.
I do think, as far as making a TV show, having his descendant be the one who's like set up this organization, that's an interesting concept.
But they've thrown in some weird stuff with them not being able to find the genealogy link.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're going to make that a causal thing with time travel, where they can't prove that yet because it's in flux or what. But she only knows she's related because HG ran. They made HG an idiot.
Yes.
at every fucking turn, they made HG an idiot.
Yeah.
When the man who invented the time machine that got him here can't work the remotes and wakes her up because he turns the TV on and it's too loud, and I started yelling at the TV then.
It's so goofy.
No, I didn't. I didn't. Scene. I started yelling at the TV before that, because before that was the bathroom scene where a woman gives a monologue about her trust issues while shaving the face of the naked, total stranger criminal who she's let stay in her apartment overnight. And the entire explanation for this is, I'm from Texas, so I have a gun.
The whole thing of like,
they make that joke
like
twice.
Letting him take a shower there, helping him out, and then like, oh, I have a gun in my room. That's it.
I'm from Texas.
Bullshit.
She makes the Texas joke fucking twice. Yeah.
Very frustrating. And they got rid of his mustache, which I'm like, that was like the one thing he should totally keep in 2017.
Totally un-HG'd him. Yeah. It was like, well, now you're bland schmuck. It's like he went invisible. Like Gollum slipped the ring on.
Yes. Yes.
But I'll argue, I think that was the point as far as like the fiction of the show, because they don't want him to look like he stands out. They want him to look like he belongs in the 21st century.
You put him in Williamsburg, New York, and he fits right in again.
Okay. I thought that same thing, that, well, they had to shave it because otherwise, except that I already saw this show be shockingly good when it shouldn't have been, and it was called Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
That shouldn't have worked, and it's still going and doesn't anymore. But season one of Sleepy Hollow was fun in a way that we all went, how the fuck could Ichabod be brought to modern time? And he kept the stupid coat and he kept the, everything in it, and it was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'm watching time after time going, I loved this movie, you sons of bitches.
Yeah. Well, this is Kevin Williamson, who made like The Following, and
so
he doesn't do fun.
I know what you did next summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he also made Scream, for God's sake. Like, I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah. The win for me here is that I live in an era where there are so many time travel shows on television that this one can suck.
This is how I feel about bad superhero shows.
Yes. Yeah. I live in a time where there can be crap superhero shows.
That said, I'm still going to watch episode 3 because I'm curious.
Oh, really?
I don't know how long I'll watch it.
They've got
But I'm curious to see if it's got to get to a point of being not amusingly terrible for me. It's got to be a point where it's just boring, because I actually was having fun with it because it's so stupid.
Where do you have the time?
I don't. I probably won't watch that much of it.
That was terrible.
I'll probably watch more of this.
Well, speaking of the time traveling feud between H.G. Wells and Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, let's get to Dangerous People.
Yes, let's jump over to Feud, which just debuted over on FX, and this tells the story of Joan Crawford and Bette Davis.
Finally, an interesting fight.
And this was really good.
This was really good.
So I was sort of putting off watching this because the trailers and everything looked really good, stylized. Tim Minear's involved in it. Ryan Murphy's involved in it. This looked like a good show. Or maybe Tim Minear's not involved. Maybe he's just promoting his friend. But
no, he's involved.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah.
But it's Jessica Lange, it's Susan Sarandon. But for whatever reason, I don't know how interested I am in the Bette Davis, Joan Crawford feud. And then I watch this, and I'm like, oh my God, old Hollywood backstabbing politics. This is so great.
Everyone in it is great.
Alfred Molina?
Well, Alfred Molina's great. I mean, he's always great. Catherine Zeta-Jones is Olivia de Havilland. Kathy Bates is in it. Judy Greer looks like death warmed over Hollywood Reporter. She's amazing.
That's Judy Greer.
Wait, Judy Davis.
Judy Davis, not Judy Greer. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was like,
No. Judy Greer would have to age up by like 10 years to 20 years.
Kieran Shipka? Is that
Kieran Shipka is her daughter. Yeah, that was a big
from
surprise.
Mad Men.
Stanley Tucci as Jack Warner.
Oh my God.
Allison Wright, who, by the way, The Americans is where I know that name.
Yeah.
She's in there as just a small part, but I had not realized that was Catherine Zeta-Jones. I didn't catch that. But yeah, tons of people. And more to the point, the lead characters, Jessica Lange and Susan Sarandon, are killing it.
Oh, yeah. I was saying earlier, there's a reason you hire Jessica Lange for things.
Yeah.
And part of it is the ease that it appears that she can flip the switch between cast iron bitch to needy child.
Yeah.
Where there's a couple of scenes where she's looking at Molina, the director, and after doing a scene.
Yeah.
And you see her go from this just powerhouse presence that runs this set to just this, oh, was I good in the scene? And she so desperately needs it right then.
Yeah.
She does the same thing with Bette Davis where, you know, when you're good, you're good.
Yeah.
And oh, am I? You really
just
like me?
Needed that. Yeah.
And it's
you almost, genuine.
Like I feel dirty watching it. Of like, oh my God, that's needy.
Yeah.
Like, ugh.
Yeah. I mean, all the performances are great, but Jessica Lange runs away with this pilot.
I'm in the minority in my friend group for not really liking Susan Sarandon. She's never been an actress I particularly cared for. This is my favorite thing I've ever seen her do.
Really? I've always liked Susan Sarandon, and I liked her.
She's never terrible. I mean, she's always good in movies. She just was never a particularly great actress for me. I didn't have a crush on her from Bull Durham or anything.
Yeah, I do.
And but
and Rocky Horror.
She walks away. I mean, she's so great as Betty. These are great roles.
Yeah. Like,
these are such fun roles.
That big finale with the makeup when she comes in is so good.
And getting the weird backstabbing backstories on these things. Like I knew how crazy she looks in the movie.
Yeah.
Whatever Happened to Baby Jane with the pancake makeup and all of that. I didn't realize that was one of
Bette Davis.
That was an old wig of Crawford's.
Joan Crawford's,
Almost said Catherine Hepburn. That was an old wig of Joan Crawford's, and that she basically just painted herself up to look like a garish clown version of Crawford.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and then just threw it in her face. Like, this is going to be so deliciously fun. And that intro.
Yeah, the intro.
Is that Saul Bass?
Yes. At least they're aping Saul Bass. Yeah.
That's why. Is he dead?
I don't know. I don't know if they really got back.
I feel like he's still alive.
If they really got him, that's awesome. Because otherwise, he needs
it looks
to sue.
Just like
it's a Vertigo or Anatomy of a Murder posters. Yeah, yeah, they nailed
it. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
It's my favorite since Mad Men in terms of animated intro like that.
By
it's
the way,
gorgeous.
One of the things I really like about this in general, talking about the intro, the production design, like the old Hollywood of all this, looks fantastic.
Oh, everything down to the lighting, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was really good. And again, I did not think subject matter was going to win me over, but this is definitely on I can't wait to see episode 2.
Yeah. They hook you really well. They builded it right in. And I'm loving it.
All right.
Let's jump over to The Americans, which also just brought back its first episode. And this is season 5, I want to say.
Yeah. I think we got one more season after this.
Yeah. And oh man, that intro sequence with the young Vietnamese kid going to high school and befriending a Russian. I'm like, where are they going with this?
I thought, and I wasn't paying careful enough attention.
Yeah.
I thought that was his son and that they had sent that we were seeing his son trying to assimilate into America because it's a different character.
Yeah, it's not.
But I thought it was his son that, and so I was not expecting look, it's the Jennings.
I just kept waiting for the older daughter to kind of pop in there, like that's who they're going to interact with in the high school. But no, it wasn't. Like, oh shit.
Yeah, there's a whole separate con they're running.
And it seems like they might have been running this while their other stuff was going on in the previous seasons.
Yeah.
I really couldn't tell the time jump until we see Henry standing taller than his sister at like 8 feet tall. Yeah. I'm like, shit, that kid grew.
Yeah. By the way, all the stuff with Henry and Paige and Stan and Stan's son, like all that. That is such a House of Cards.
Yeah.
I love that basically, like, he's more or less adopted Paige and Henry. And having her that close when Paige knows the truth is so dangerous.
It's all uncomfortable. It's so unsettling.
Yeah.
And then I look at the Oleg?
Oleg. Do you still love the Russian stuff?
Man, I don't.
I really want to know where that's going because I like seeing the breadlines and the corruption and sort of – I want to see – a look at these sort of corruption because what the other side of the Americans, the story is about them, you know, infiltrating 80s America and them thinking it's going to fall. But their story's got to be about realizing they've lost the Cold War. And the reason they lost the Cold War is because of military spending sort of starving the infrastructure of Russia.
Yeah. And
I want to see that.
I thought it was interesting when they invite themselves over to have dinner with the other family.
Yeah.
And the Russian dad is talking about how things sucked over there.
Yeah.
And their Vietnamese spy was basically like, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
I can't believe he would say such stuff about that.
Yeah.
And there's how the two leads play their relationship and the dynamic and like the things said and unsaid in their whole thing. Like, it just seems like Kerry Russell. What are the names of them? The
Kerry Russell is Elizabeth. And Matthew Reese as Philip.
Yeah, Elizabeth and Philip. Elizabeth, like how aggressively she tries to like defend it.
Yeah.
In a way, like seems fake, and then it becomes like this one-upmanship between them because then he points out like how poor he was and he was starving and like he couldn't and there's the history of where they both came from. There's that friction, but also he doesn't buy into the love affair with Russia that she still seems to have.
He went a little Native American, she didn't.
Yeah. And I'm just always so impressed with how now we know those characters and we know how what they're saying behind the scenes, I guess.
Yeah. Also, I liked the brief glimpse of Gabriel and Claudia, Franklin Jella and Margot Martindale.
Yeah.
Just that little scene. It was a great scene and some great dialogue.
And how he goes, they're tough as nails. And she says
nothing scares though. And he says everything scares
those
two.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a perfect line for them.
And then there's that weird final sequence where they were doing all this digging. And I was like, what are they doing? This is weird. And it all builds up to one of those ruthless moments.
Think about that scene and then think about Legion this week as well.
Yeah.
It's like the last 20 minutes of both of these shows were silence.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, that's so bizarre that two FX shows did a very similar thing here with like just having no noise. But yeah, that end sequence where they're just digging and digging and they really belabor the point of showing how long this takes.
Yeah.
I was surprised that they would dedicate that much time to it.
Yeah.
But I thought the gut punch at the end with this guy that we've kind of gotten used to seeing and then just putting a bullet in his head and leaving him there was just like, oh, shit.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, no surprises. The Americans come back and it's as great as ever.
Yeah. I'm fully on board.
Yeah.
I think I waffle with this show sometimes about like how much I love it and how much I don't because I really don't like the Russian thing.
I'm all in and always have been.
Such a boring plot line, but everything else is always fantastic.
Well, it could be time after time.
Now, this is one of those shows that I've come in late on per the question earlier. And I know that Randy, you had specifically said, like, don't watch this season.
Don't start with season five.
Just go ahead and start this show. It's amazing. Yeah. So,
but you should, because you would love this show.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check it out.
Let's jump over and talk about Legion this week.
Yep. Per the other question on spoilers, I'm leaving the room for this.
We'll call you back in when...
Fair enough.
Yeah, because I don't want to spoil this episode, because episode five of Legion was great.
All of the episodes are great, but here in particular, it makes a shift. And this shift, I didn't feel like... I was really surprised that... what's Legion's name?
David Haller.
David. That David came back from the astral plane, like, knowing himself and embracing his powers.
And he didn't.
Like, because at the beginning, I was like... Wait, he didn't seem like he felt confident all of a sudden coming from there. What it was that Shadow King has basically done a full takeover of him.
Well, this is what I've been saying. I was wrong on a couple things. One is that I didn't think the telekinetic guy was real. Clearly he is. I didn't think a lot of this stuff was real. Clearly there's more real than I thought.
Yeah.
But I was right about Shadow King being that basically Lenny was the Shadow King's manifestation.
So do you think that Shadow King was controlling him this entire episode?
Yes.
During the sex scenes with Sid?
Yeah. Every time you saw him being confident, that was the Shadow King in charge of him.
I don't know. I mean,
I think it is.
It seemed like there was something genuine about his relationship with her still.
Yes, but I think the confidence he got in his powers and the ability to do that came from the Shadow King. I don't think that he gave it to him and let him use it.
One scene I loved in particular is when Sid is talking to Professor X lady, the head lady, and she basically lays down the law with her, like, I don't care about his therapy.
Yeah.
That's my man. And just like saying that, I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. I just love
the relationship.
I loved kind of the thing where he's like, look, I'm going to get my sister. I don't care what the rest of you want. And he's like, and Sid tells him, well, they're going to try and stop us. And says, I mean, like, this was a different, you could tell there was something else going on. And then the after effects of his raid on the D3,
like we got
Division 3, whatever
that was,
it is.
Like 20 minutes in when they all of a sudden get to that. I'm like, are we almost done with the episode?
Yeah.
Because holy shit, look at this war zone.
Yeah, and that big, the flip where you see the IR camera or whatever and you can see it's the Shadow King.
Yeah.
That was great and creepy as fuck.
There's a couple scenes in here. Aubrey Plaza.
Yeah.
When she's in the red bathroom with him and just like how she's crawling around and how she's talking.
Yeah.
When she's talking to Sid in the bedroom at the house, or the haunted house. Like, this seemed like three episodes kind of like in one because you have the first part with them at the home base and him building his relationship with Sid, and then the whole war zone at District 3 or whatever.
Yep.
And then the whole haunted house thing at the end.
Yep.
And how they tie all of that together and just kept the pace really moving in this episode is really impressive.
Also, I mean, they didn't give short shrift to anybody else. Like the story of the Loudermilks, Carrie and Carrie Loudermilk.
Yeah.
The seeing them merge and heal and her come back out with the spiked bat and all that kind of stuff. Like there were cool moments for everybody. I don't know why everybody's so stylized. I don't know why Tanami carries a Tommy gun,
which
is the most retro thing in the world, but I love it. And
it's
those
just
little
not
bits,
acknowledged.
Yeah, those little bits were great. I also think the scene where Haller sings the rainbow song.
Oh yeah,
was creepy as fuck.
It was so. There's something beautiful about it, but like it's just also at the same time, hey, we're destroying your childhood with this scene.
Well, his voice
trying
is
to remember it.
His voice is like breaking, and he's kind of tittering a little bit, and it's you can see that it's the Shadow King just having a great time playing around with this meat body that he's got. And I thought Rachel Keller's been doing a great job as Sid in general, but I thought in this episode where she had to step up and sort of be the protagonist since Haller was more or less gone, like there were some great scenes with her this episode.
So Dr. Melanie Bird, still no display of powers here. And I was so thinking, like, once we're in this house, that we're gonna have to see something from her.
I still think she's a telepath. I still think she's a telepath of some kind. But I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe she has no powers.
Like, that's lame. There's just too many telepaths all of a sudden then.
There's a lot of telepaths.
If he's a telepath, if Patonomy's a telepath, and if that dude with the big head, the eye as they call him, if he's also a telepath, that's just too many.
Is he a telepath? I'm not sure about the eye.
Yeah, he's able to look into people, control them. He can see the astral plane.
Okay,
He also was able to disguise himself at the very end, so he's in that house.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I don't know. They are focusing heavily on telepathy-type powers, mental-type powers, so it sort of makes sense to me.
Okay, here's the other weird thing, though. He disguises himself as the other dude.
Yeah.
The guy who's able to do telekinetic powers. And he's going up the stairs, but then all of a sudden we see all of them in the meeting, in the psych ward meeting, where that's all being controlled by the Shadow King.
Yeah.
And he's not there. So I guess the other guy's still there, too.
Yeah.
I thought maybe he'd killed him.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
This was great. And this was, I felt like this is the big reveal. We've been waiting to see what the deal is with the Shadow King, what his plan was.
I mean, we kind of figured out like the dog is him and all that stuff.
But the,
right?
The Loudermilk explaining that he's like a parasite and he's been with him for 30 years was really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seemed like a little bit of a stretch. Like, how do you all of a sudden know all that?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't understand. Like the scene where he got all the information and just started spouting that out. And I was like, okay, I'll just accept it.
Yeah.
Sure. I'll roll with this. Man, there are three more episodes of this. And I keep thinking, why can't we have a second season of this?
We could. We won't.
This is a fantastic show.
We could have a second season.
Oh, man, that'd be fantastic. All right. Well, I think we can go ahead and wrap things up there.
Yep.
Les is still hiding out in the other room. But
he is hiding from the Shadow King.
Or he's infected.
What if he's infected?
What if he's infected?
Yep.
He's going to come back in here. He's supposed to tell us if this episode was any good or not.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He's a time-traveling wizard.
That's right.
Oh, well, I'll assume that the show was pretty good. And we covered a lot of stuff there.
We did.
Well, listeners, if you guys have any questions, if you have any feedback, you guys know where to hit us up. Mainly do that on the Facebook page. That's probably going to be the best space for that. But also, if you guys want to help us out, don't forget there's iTunes and there is Patreon and Blips.
And Blips.
And Blips. Until next week, Randy.
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.